Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
So we have a dysfunctional media ecosystem. I don't just mean mainstream media. I mean our partisan presses. I mean our conservative news outlets. I mean a lot of the progressive news outlets. It's not just the mainstream media's problem anymore.
What they see is the equals sign and love wins and all of these very compassion-based symbols that don't actually tell the accurate story. What they tell is the progressivist view of the story.
Everything in the seeker-driven and big-box churches is measured for its emotive value, to evoke some kind of emotion or feeling from people in the audience.
North Dakotans raising little Lutherans, love, issues, etc.
I believe God loves Almighty.
Given what feminism is today, and it is a lot of things, maybe it would be a good idea to ask a question. It's purely hypothetical, but maybe not entirely hypothetical. It is possible that feminism can be reformed, not plausible, but possible. What if feminism had not adopted the sexual revolution as it did? What if it had not pitted children and family against the movement? What if it had not emphasized and continued to emphasize the burdens of being a woman over the joys of being a woman? What would feminism then look like today? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Live this Wednesday afternoon, June the 27th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking with Mona Charon, a nationally syndicated columnist and author of the new book, Sex Matters, How Modern Feminism Lost Touch with Science, Love, and Common Sense. A little bit later, the big news today, of course, is the announced retirement from the Supreme Court of Justice Anthony Kennedy. This isn't just any justice, and this isn't just any retirement. It's going to be news, well, for the foreseeable future. Dr. Robert George of Princeton University will tell us what he thinks it means and what it will mean in the near future. Terry Matting will join us after that to talk about media coverage of religious liberty and the Supreme Court's decision to uphold President Trump's travel ban. And then there's a St. Louis conference for LGBTQ Christians coming up soon. Andrew Walker has some concerns and some thoughts, and we'll get those in the last half hour of Issues Etc., along with a response to a Washington Post story titled Climate Change is a Top Spiritual Priority for These Religious Leaders. Dr. Cal Beisner is quoted in the story, and we'll see what he thinks about the religious priority of climate change and global warming. Joining us to talk about the price of feminism, Mona Charon, nationally syndicated columnist, contributor to National Review, and author of the new book, Sex Matters, How Modern Feminism Lost Touch with Science, Love, and Common Sense. Mona, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
You end your book, your latest book, telling the story of Anne Marie Slaughter and her time at the State Department. Tell us that story, and what does it illustrate?
She was a high-ranking State Department official, worked in the Obama administration, and she wrote this piece in The Atlantic at the time about her decision. She said, "I was standing at a glittering cocktail party with heads of state from all over the world. The president and the first lady were there in New York. I had this glamorous job at the State Department, but I knew even as I was clinking champagne glasses that I was going to quit my job." And then she goes on to explain her 14-year-old son, who was at home in New Jersey. Her husband was caring for him, but he was struggling. He was having trouble in school. He wasn't doing his homework. He was really having a little bit of depression, and she felt that her place was with him. And so she gave up this glamorous job, and she wrote a piece called Why Women Still Can't Have It All, and her explanation for her decision. I found that really interesting because she talked about it in terms of not sacrifice, but it was the right decision for her family, which is the way I think many women evaluate similar choices that they have in life. And they don't necessarily see things just in terms of their own career advancement or making the maximum amount of money, but they choose to put their families front and center in their life decisions. And I did the same thing. And I think it's something that should be celebrated and not mourned.
Let's talk a little bit about what possible benefits or marginal benefits we have derived from feminism. How would you describe those?
So I'm a critic, very strong critic of many aspects of feminism, but it hasn't been a total loss. There have been a number of changes in society that have been beneficial. Certainly, equal pay for equal work is a very, very laudatory goal, very necessary. I would also add that feminists agitated to ensure that women who had been victims of rape, it was out of bounds to impeach them on the stand if they were found to be unchaste in any way. This was thought to make them less believable as rape victims. And feminists pushed back against that, and I think that was all to the good.
Let's talk a little bit about what feminism claims to have accomplished. In some senses, you say that it might have actually happened without feminism. And one of those things is a return of women or a influx of women into the workplace. Could that have happened without feminism?
Yeah, I'm skeptical of the feminist narrative that women entering the workforce in large numbers was their achievement. There's a lot of evidence that this change was happening anyway. It predated the feminist philosophers. It started in the 1950s with large numbers of women moving into the labor force. And it was probably a combination of the changing economy, the switch from an industrial to a post-industrial economy or an information-based economy, which plays more to women's than men's strengths. It probably also had something to do with the labor-saving devices that became available and with the growing wealth of the country that permitted more choices and leisure time. And, you know, more families, for example, started to have two cars instead of one, which was the norm back in the 1940s and 50s. But soon families started to have more than one car, and that made it easier for women to work as well as their husbands. And single women had always been in the workforce. Now, did the feminists contribute to that? Yeah, they probably contributed some, but I think it's overstated to not see these other factors at work in the changes that we saw in the post-World War II America.
What is the feminist narrative? How would you describe it?
The feminist narrative is that women are oppressed by men, and that the goal of feminism should be to free women from all forms of male oppression. That includes the family, which is seen as an institution that serves the interests of men, not women. It includes a tremendous hostility toward men on the part of women. Those are sort of the underlying beliefs. But there was also the belief, strangely enough, since the feminists think that men are so terrible, but they also think that men and women are just alike, except for socialization. So they deny or really strongly resist the idea that there are certain essential and sort of hardwired differences between men and women that affect their life choices and their decisions. You know, so whenever they see a difference, say, in the number of women math and science majors versus men, or loggers or roofers or something else, they always attribute it to discrimination, or women are being held back, or there's a leaky pipeline or a glass ceiling, or, you know, so forth. And often it's just that women have different priorities and different interests. So there are a lot of women who, as I show in Sex Matters, women tend to gravitate to fields that are more people-oriented. They like working with people. They like taking care of others. They like taking care of animals. So women dominate in veterinary medicine now to an extraordinary degree. Was that because veterinary medicine was less patriarchal than other fields? I don't think so. I think it's just because it appeals to women. And similarly, you see many more women going into medicine and into pediatrics and so forth, rather than, say, engineering. And of course, there are a lot of varieties within the sexes. There's all different kinds of people, thank God, in this world. But in general, it's a generalization that is true, that men gravitate more toward things and technical subjects, and women tend to gravitate more toward people.
If we can continue in that vein of the big picture, if that's the feminist narrative, what is the feminist end game? I know that equal pay for equal work was kind of an intermediate goal, but it doesn't seem to have satisfied the feminist impulse. What is the end game as far as you can tell, Mona?
The end game is total androgyny, that there would be absolutely no difference between men and women in any way. Everything would be 50-50. I quote Sheryl Sandberg, who wrote Lean In, where she said she thinks it would be a better world if men ran half the homes and women ran half the companies and, you know, were represented 50-50 in politics and so forth. And I don't agree that that would be a better world. I think that it disrespects the choices that women freely make and want to make and are happy making. The fact is that women often choose a career with less money or less prestige because they want more family time. I certainly did. I had three sons. I wanted to be at home with them. That was more important to me than getting more money or more attention or a TV show of my own or whatever. Those were my priorities. And as I show in Sex Matters, they're the priorities of a lot of mothers, in fact, the majority, who are glad to cut back at work to take care of children and to tend to their homes. Now, they tend to go back after the children are grown, which is great, and our lives are long, and given a little bit of luck, we can all so-called have it all, but just not all at the same time. And so I think this feminist effort to drive women away from these choices, to suggest that if they're not making exactly the same amount of money as men throughout their lifetimes, that somehow they're the losers, misses this bigger picture about what is a full life and what makes people happy. I think when you look at the data, you find, and talk to women, you find that those who have cut back in order to care for family members are the happiest with their choices. So the feminists are trying to sort of force women in a certain direction that may not be what truly fits women's desires.
We're talking about the price of feminism. Mona Charon, a nationally syndicated columnist, contributor to National Review, and author of the new book, Sex Matters, How Modern Feminism Lost Touch with Science, Love, and Common Sense, is our guest. She mentioned there the full life for women. Maybe that explains what she wrote just yesterday. The wage gap is real, but it arises from motherhood. We'll talk about that after this.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com. churchmusicsolutions.com.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. but no matter how you say it, Ad Crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift-buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
You don't own me. I'm not just one of your many toys. You don't own me.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the price of feminism. Mona Charon is our guest. She's authored several best-selling books, including her latest, Sex Matters, How Modern Feminism Lost Touch with Science, Love, and Common Sense. Mona, before the break, you were talking about the full life for women, which includes, from various times, raising their children and also, at times, having a career. Yesterday, I believe you wrote, the wage gap is real, but it arises from motherhood. Is that what you were talking about?
Yeah. When you compare the salaries of similarly situated young men and women just starting out in their careers before children come along, there's no pay gap, or it's trivial, between men and women. Where it begins to show up is as women get into their late 20s and 30s when they start bearing children, and that's when the so-called wage gap begins to show up. Well, it's because women tend to cut back, tend to work fewer hours. So yeah, they do earn less money, but it's well worth the trade-off as far as the women themselves are concerned. And the data show that women who have a choice, that is, they have a husband who can help support them and so forth, and they're in a certain social class, those who are able to cut back are the majority of women say that that is what they prefer. And then, of course, they're ready to go back. And I just have this sense that the feminist emphasis on measuring everything in terms of market performance and jobs and so forth is missing out on the best part of life, which is our families, our loved ones, the care and devotion that we show to one another. That's really where our heart is, and that's the most fundamental aspects of life. And when I talk to young people, male and female, by the way, I mean, I said this to my sons. I have three sons. And I said, the most important decision you will ever make is not what you're going to do to earn money, what you're going to do as a career. So a career is important, and it's gratifying. But what's most important is who you marry. And I'd say that to all the young people I talk with, that get your personal life right, and the rest will fall into place. And I think that's kind of a countercultural message.
Let's talk a little bit about the hookup culture. That's the common term, which we usually apply to millennials or to college students, where its damage is most in evidence. But it certainly has found its way up into adult life. The whole hookup culture has spread even to senior citizens nowadays. Is that a product of feminism?
Well, it is a product of feminism's mistake in that feminism endorsed the sexual revolution going back to the 1970s, which is often called the second wave of feminists. The first wave was the suffragist. Second wave was the 1960s and 70s. And they were partly responsible for the sexual ethic that we now have because they believed that in order for women to be fully equal, they had to, as they put it, crush the patriarchy. And what that meant was that they had to push back against the idea that marriage was the norm, and they felt that they were in rebellion against the so-called sexual double standard, where women weren't allowed to fool around without losing their reputations, whereas men were, and they thought, well, that's not right. Everybody should be able to fool around without losing their reputations. And what I'm saying in Sex Matters is, actually, first of all, this doesn't serve the interests of women. That was a big mistake. But second, why didn't they say, you know what? Nobody should be able to do that without loss of reputation. Why didn't they make the rules that did apply to women apply more equally to men? Instead, they modeled what they saw as the ideal life for women. They modeled it not just on men, but on the worst men, the men who were not faithful, the men who were not committed. When I got to college in the 1970s, it was considered some sort of victory for the sisterhood if women were promiscuous. It was a bad, wrong step. And so now we are faced with a world in which not only casual sex is the norm, but hooking up, that is, having sex with people that you don't even know, is normal or normalized. Now, not everyone does it, thank goodness, and there are moves against it, but it's dehumanizing to treat sexuality that way, and it's coarsening, and it's the enemy of love. People want and need human connection, and women particularly need love in order to be sexually aroused. And men, even though they don't, they are better off when they are in a loving relationship, and I think most good men would agree with that. And so calling for a bit of a counter-revolution when it comes to sexual behavior.
What is the real relationship between feminism and the Me Too movement?
So a lot of the Me Too people see themselves as being part of feminism, but there is another way to interpret it. You could be pro-woman without being necessarily feminist. You can be pro-woman and say the Me Too movement is a cry of pain by women who are tired of being disrespected and pawed and grabbed and groped and mistreated by men who have been given way too much permission by the sexual revolution to just behave in any old fashion toward women. They've been told, well, there are no differences between the way men and women view sex and sexuality, so let it all hang out. You know, no reason to treat women as fragile flowers. They're just like men. Well, actually, we're not. We're not. And I think women really do want and expect and should demand to be treated not as sex objects, but as whole human beings. And that means that the Me Too movement could be the start of something terrific if it's seen as a act of rebellion by women against the loose sexual morals that have prevailed for the last several decades.
You say that modern feminism has lost touch with science. How so?
Yeah. The original second wave feminists really believed that there were no differences between the sexes except for anatomical ones. They thought that psychologically and in every other way, we were the same except for what was imposed upon us by our upbringing. And the science in the intervening decades has shown this is absolutely not true, that there are certain hardwired traits that are evident in men and women. They're evident in the first days of life. So, for example, a baby girl will respond more to the sound of a human in distress than a baby boy. And a baby boy will respond more to blinking lights and moving objects than a girl. These things show up, and there are many other traits that are like this as well. And these traits are evident at such a young age that it cannot possibly be socially imposed. It has to be innate. Also, if you look at the science of sex differences in terms of the body and the brain, there's been a tremendous amount of work done that shows that male brains and female brains are slightly differently organized. Men's are more compartmentalized, whereas women's are more diffuse. So there was a famous case study written up by a doctor in Maryland who found that men who had strokes in a certain part of their brain completely lost the ability, you know, their spatial relations, whereas women who had an injury to the identical part of their brain did not lose all their spatial relation skills. It shows that for men, it was all focused in that one area, whereas for women, it was more widely distributed. There are other brain anatomical differences that we now know about that the feminists did not know about in the 1960s and 70s. And then there are certain traits that are universal. For example, what men and women search for in a mate. If you look across cultures and across time and place, you will find that men are interested in finding women who are young and beautiful, whereas women tend to be interested in men who have resources. And you find this from Iran to Brazil to England to, you know, everywhere around the globe and throughout time. And if something is that universal and shows up everywhere in similar fashion, then you have to assume, I think, that science is telling us something. It's telling us that this is not socially imposed. It is rather innate, because if it was purely socially constructed, you would expect to find some cultures someplace where it was different.
Mona Charon is our guest. She's a nationally syndicated columnist and a contributor to National Review. Her latest book, Sex Matters, How Modern Feminism Lost Touch with Science, Love, and Common Sense. We're talking about the price of feminism. When we come back, is it possible for feminism to be reformed? Stay tuned.
I'm
You could win an audio DVD of every presentation from all six Issues Etc. Making the Case conferences. Record your answer to the question, Issues Etc., What Does This Mean? On our comment line, 618-223-8382. If we play your answer during Issues Etc., we'll send you a conference audio DVD of almost 50 hours of teaching. 618-223-8382 and answer the question, Issues Etc., What Does This Mean? Please be sure to mention where you listen.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Whether you're a man yourself or a woman who cares about the men in your life, you won't want to miss the June issue of The Lutheran Witness. Join John Kleinig, Hans Feeney, Jeffrey Hemmer, Broer Erickson, and others in this power-packed issue on men at church as they explore toxic masculinity, godly fatherhood, the religious gender gap, and more. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
40 years greatly blessed is this year's theme at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provide an alternative to secular public high schools. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a special 40th anniversary tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the giving page. Or call me, Dr. Jay Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our congregational sponsorship program, the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. You'll find an informational flyer on the support page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. The Issues Etc. 300.
I am not a pretty girl. That is not what I do. I ain't no damsel in distress. And I don't need to be rescued, so put me down.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about the price of feminism. Mona Charon, nationally syndicated columnist and author of the book Sex Matters, is our guest. Mona, can feminism be reformed? Is it capable of reform?
Well, I hope so, but I wouldn't bank too much on feminists who tend to be pretty rigid ideologically. I wouldn't bank on them changing much, but I would think when you look at surveys and you ask American women whether they consider themselves feminists, only a minority say yes. The rest say no because they find feminism to be too extreme and too anti-male. So for, I think, the average woman, a reformed feminism or a new counter-revolution would possibly have more appeal, even if for hardline feminists, they may not be so flexible.
I'm wondering, this is kind of a huge hypothetical, Mona, but had feminism not adopted the sexual revolution, had it not pitted children and family against kind of the movement or really being part of the sisterhood, had feminism not emphasized, as you say, the burdens of femininity rather than the pleasures, what might it look like today? What might it have accomplished?
I think we'd have a far happier world. I think the bitterness between men and women that is all around us is poisoning our culture. I think the decline of families has been an ongoing tragedy with a great many victims, including men. Men who are unmarried are much more likely to have mental health issues. They drink too much. They tend to be unlinked to their communities and their children, and they tend not to be as hardworking. In fact, 22% of prime-age males are not working at all, which is a record in American history except during the Great Depression. There are many, many problems that women experience now, including, so among the educated classes, it's harder for women to find men to marry because men have less incentive to get married than they used to have. And among the high school graduate or less than college graduates in our society, women are having to cope with all of the responsibilities of adulthood and parenthood without help from men. So marriage is declining very precipitously among lesser educated Americans, leaving children far worse off, and women really feeling very vulnerable. They are, you know, one job loss or one accident or one crime or one illness away from disaster. And it's pretty grim. And I think that feminism has contributed, not solely the fault of feminism, but it certainly has contributed to some of those trends. And I think it's truly sad.
The darkest facet of modern feminism is its partnership with what they call reproductive rights, but really abortion on demand when stated plainly. And the two have become almost synonymous with one another. Yeah. How did that happen?
Well, because the feminism that we know grew out of the New Left. It was part of a radical movement at the time. And they embraced this idea, and it became rigidified over the years. And it alienates millions of women, including myself, from anything that the feminists are going to say on any other subject, because they have so closely bound themselves to the cruel and immoral act of abortion that, you know, one of the things that I say in Sex Matters is that you would have thought that feminists would be the ones to uphold and to honor the best that is in women. And one of the best things about women is their capacity to care for and be tender toward the most vulnerable members of our society. And women have always been at the forefront of social movements that are about caring for orphans or protecting the mentally ill or, you know, providing schools for poor children. That's always been a feature of feminine social activism. And to link women to killing the unborn is so alien to what is best in women that it has served to discredit the modern feminist movement in many ways and de-link it from what was best about earlier feminine reform movements.
You have discussed this a little bit already today, but how in a nutshell has modern feminism lost touch with love?
Modern feminism sees men as essentially the oppressors of women and the enemies of women, and they do not accept men for the way they are. They want to remake men in a feminine image. First of all, most women don't want that, and most men don't want it. And so they've lost that wonderful chemistry that happens between men and women, where there were recent social science studies that showed that both women and men like what they call benevolent sexism, namely when men hold doors for women, when men pick up the check, when men give women their coat when they're cold, all of these little gestures of care and chivalry that the feminists did so much to denigrate are actually quite popular with most women and with men. And this constant chafing, angry resentment that feminists bring to the table toward masculinity is not healthy, and it does alienate both sexes from love.
You also say that feminism has lost touch with just good old-fashioned common sense. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I'll give you one example. One of the things that has been invented in order to fight the scourge of date rape, and it is a scourge, I don't deny that it is a very, very serious problem. So somebody came up with an invention where women could put nail polish on that would change color if someone slipped a date rape drug into their drink. And some of the feminists protested this and said they would not wear this nail polish, and they discouraged women from using the nail polish because they said it forces the woman to take responsibility, and what we should be doing is teaching men not to rape. And one of them, I quote in the book, said, I don't want to live in the world where I have to watch what I drink or what I wear or where I go. I shouldn't have to do that. Talk about losing touch with common sense. Look, none of us wants to live in a world where we have to memorize passwords or we have to lock our doors or not leave the car running with the keys in it. It'd be great if we lived in a world where you didn't have to worry about any of those things. But that's not the real world. And so it's just common sense that you take elementary precautions about your own safety. This is an example of feminists losing touch with common sense.
I used to watch you back in the 1990s on CNN's The Capital Gang. You were an original panel member, if I'm not mistaken. And some might say, Mona, if you'd had spent a little more time on your career instead of your husband and your three sons, you might have, probably would have been a millionaire now, hosting your own show on Fox News. How do you respond to that?
I say it might be true. And the fact is that I would have been wealthier, but would my family have been better off? No, much worse off. Life is not just about having, right? So in the chapter where I talk about having it all, I challenge this notion that is so current in our self-centered age, which is, how do I have it all? How do I get mine? And instead, focus on giving. It's an important part of human nature, and ironically, actually, it leads to more happiness in the end, even though you're not aiming at happiness per se. But when I was taking care of my children and my husband and my home and giving, I have two kids with special needs, when I was fulfilling that role, I was at peace. I felt that I was really where I needed to be, doing what I needed to be doing, and that nothing was more important. There are many, many people who can have their own shows, many people who can interpret the news, many people who can be pundits. There's only one person who could be the mother to my children, and I'm not replaceable there. And so, one, I push back on the idea that it's all about having. Sometimes it's about giving. But two, I also point out that life is long, and with any luck, and some people die young, but most of us live quite long lives these days, and there's time enough for everything. You just can't do everything all at once.
Finally, you had mentioned that you have three sons, but if you had daughters or a daughter, what would you want her to know about growing up as a young woman and a woman in America today? What would you tell her?
I would tell her to insist upon a man who came from a good family, who had a good role model, if not the father. So many men grow up without fathers these days, which is a tragedy, but at least a positive role model, male role model in his life. I would ask a daughter to think about her life as a whole, not just in terms of a career, but in terms of her overall goals for a balanced life. That is, one with a family and children, if she so desires, and not if she doesn't, but that the important things in life are our intimate relationships and our communities and our personal lives. When we get those things right, the other parts of life can fall into place so much more readily.
Mona Charon is a nationally syndicated columnist, contributor to National Review, author of the new book, Sex Matters, How Modern Feminism Lost Touch with Science, Love, and Common Sense. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mona, thank you very much.
Thank you. It was great talking with you.
On the other side of the break, Justice Anthony Kennedy in the Supreme Court has announced today that at the end of July, he will be retiring from the court. That leaves an open seat. That means that, well, for the foreseeable future, for the next several months leading up to those all-important midterm elections, things are going to be very, very interesting. We're going to cover the high point, the low points of Anthony Kennedy's judicial career, his judicial philosophy, and talk about where he came from and where he took America. Molly Hemingway likes to say that it's Anthony Kennedy's America. We just happen to live here. She may be right. We'll see what Dr. Robert George of Princeton University thinks right after this.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. TheCleaningAuthority.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.